Barbados, Cuba, Dominica, and St. Vincent and the Grenadines have already eradicated hunger, the FAO report said. Brazil, Colombia, Guyana, Honduras, Nicaragua, Panama, Peru, and the Dominican Republic have already reached the first Millennium Development Goal by cutting in half the number of people suffering from hunger 2 years ahead of the 2015 deadline, it said. However, hunger and malnutrition still affects 47 million people in the region. Haiti, Guatemala, Paraguay, Nicaragua, and Bolivia are the worst affected, according to FAO.
At least 5 people have lost their lives in a U.S. assassination drone attack in Afghanistan's eastern province of Kunar. Witnesses say that the airstrike was carried out during the early hours of Tuesday. The victims of the latest drone attack are yet to be identified, although local police in Kunar have said the dead were all Taliban militants. A Taliban commander is said to be among the dead. Several deadly U.S. drone strikes have been carried out in Afghanistan over the past few days. On Sunday, at least 2 people were killed in an airstrike by U.S.-led forces in the southern province of Zabul. 2 more people died in a similar strike in Nuristan province the previous day. On November the 28th, a 2-year-old child was killed and 2 women wounded when a drone attack targeted a home.
I got a special delivery.
I've got a special delivery.
I've got a special delivery.
Here's your special delivery.
Do you cheer for the once and for all of an enemy whose hand all man Don was on in 8-3, but who now exemplifies all evil?
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
I've got a special delivery.
I've got a special delivery.
Give you a special delivery.
And I wish that I could afford the ear of Bush II. I'd ask, is it your favorite philosopher who recommend invading and exterminating all who defy us? Crying out justice, but seeking out triumphs. Was it your Christ, unbeloved of empires? One nailed his ass to a post, he expired.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ANG-newswire.blogspot.com.
And they were taken to America as a slaves, those people. They did not want to go there, and this is their country. But they were taken by force. Therefore, nobody should remove them from there. They must get independent in America, and they must control the Americans. The black people in America must be the president of the United States of America, must be the secretary of state like Kissinger.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land! Indian land!
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet Radio for Smart Aboriginal.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
If this meeting had taken place 4 days ago, we perhaps would have had a different approach, but the same subject was the brutal murder that took place in Los Angeles Friday night of a black man. I won't say a Muslim, because you and the white press wants to blow up the fact that it was a Muslim in an effort to alienate him from what they call the Negro Massacre. This was a so-called Negro that was shot down. Not one, but seven of them, in cold blood by the police. And any time some white liberal wants to jump up in my face and tell me something about the Gestapo tactics that are practiced in Nazi Germany, I'll bust you in your mouth and let the queen go on in there. If you live in the same breath, you can't describe the Gestapo tactics that are practiced in Nazi America against black people in this country, day in and day out, north, south, east, and west. You shouldn't open up your white mouth about Germany or South Africa or Portugal or any other country on this earth.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, Angry Indian, Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the Fourth World from aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. Thank you for tuning in to Indigenous News, Thought, and Analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under imperial, theological, racist, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliteral, neoliberal, neo-fascist, and neo-misogynist control. I wish to welcome you all to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Well, welcome along. Welcome along. I wish peace to the gods and earths, and love and solidarity to the entire original family in this time of strife and struggle. I'm your host, Angry Indian, and I'm here, as always, with my co-executive producer and engineer, Guadalupe Morales. And, we're still talking about Mandela. But, you know, thankfully, the conversation has now turned to the bullshit hypocrisy. You know, all of the bullocks. All of the massive, massive hypocrisy surrounding the capitalist world and its embracing all of a sudden of Mandela and his struggle. At the same time, while we have mass incarceration, while we have stop and frisk in the UK, we have stop and frisk unofficially in Canada, right? In occupied Canada, yeah, stop and frisk going across the US is an actual policy in New York. And for those on the eastern seaboard of the US continent, it turns out that the Democrats got suckered in New York, in New York City again. Lupe's husband is telling me that the cat that they just got elected over there, de Blasio, he's supposed to be the Democrat. He has a black wife. He's got a black family. He rallied in the black community with his family. He beat Bloomberg, who, as a Republican, despite everybody was, you know, what they were saying about him as a Republican, they kept reelecting him, right? So, here comes the Democrat, who was elected primarily, from what I'm understanding, on the basis of his opposition, his supposedly stated opposition to stop and frisk, that he recognized it as racial profiling, and the African community looked at his family, and because I've seen, you know, photos of them, you know, his son has a huge afro, so they went on that. Kind of like the Republican, the GOP son of a bitch down in, where was it, Lupe? Louisiana? Yeah, who fooled his constituents, well, his now constituents, into thinking that he was black so that they would elect him. It's a majority black district. They probably, if they're Republican, they would have voted for him anyway. But he had to play what the conservatives, the Republican Party, the libertarians like to call the quote-unquote race card, right? So he played the quote-unquote race card. And nobody said anything. He's not being investigated for fraud, and the election is allowed to stand, even though it was totally corrupt. But then we saw that with Bush in 2000. Bush the second, I mean. We saw that in 2000. We saw it in 2004. African men were not allowed to vote in Florida, and then I'm hearing in Ohio, and where else was that, Lupe? It's somewhere over there in the South, though, I think it was, where black men were somehow not allowed to vote. In the case of Florida, we all know about that because Greg Palast did the research. He broke the story. He had to break it in the UK news, though, didn't he? That these African males were just automatically, if their last name fit a particular stereotype and their address corresponded with what they think is the African part of town, if what they think is nigger town, right? I mean, you know, how many of you have, like I have, filled out applications for jobs with your black neighborhood address? And you know for a fact that that's why they did not even look at you. They see your last name and then you look at the address, and it's the same thing insurance companies do. They used to call it a redlining or something like that back in the 70s. And then you have blockbusting, right, where they would, you know, pay black people to shop and to, you know, skateboard and what have you through a neighborhood with big boom boxes to make people think the blacks were moving in and taking over so that, you know, they start selling their houses. So, they, you know, the realtors come in, they buy it up cheap, and then, you know, they raise all the prices and make it exclusive. I mean, we're seeing that type of gentrification all over the place. Look at Philly. Look at Philly. Like I said, Newark and Philly, I can tell you from personal experience, I've seen the gentrification. You get these neighborhoods that nobody gave a damn about. And when community people were trying to do something, well, you don't have the right to do this, you don't have a license to do this, you don't have a permit to do this, and who the hell told you that you niggas could try to actually do anything about your own, you know, living situation, your own community? Whatever gave you that idea? You take what the fuck we give you, and you leave it at that. You know, you can't be uppity. You can't tell them that you served in the Army or the Marine Corps, the Navy, or, you know, or the Air Force. They don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that you have a Purple Heart, right? They don't want to hear that you have a Bronze Star or anything like that, that you were fighting for democracy when you were fighting the Germans, when you were fighting the Vietnamese, when you were fighting the Japanese, huh? When you were fighting the Italians, right? So, you know, what's really going on? What's really going on? And that was then. I'm talking about my youth, right? So, you know, here we are, 2013. We're still having the same goddamn arguments. Wasn't Kenneth Chamberlain Marine? Because there's no such thing as a former Marine, you dig? He was a Marine. He said, Semper Fi, all of that. Did that stop them from tasering him and then, you know, ending his life over there? That's the East Coast. That's over there where de Blasio just won, right? So, I mean, you know, what's really, I mean, you got to check democracynow.org on this. Check out Amy Goodman and see what she's doing over there, man. And Juan Gonzalez and, you know, everybody else that makes that station what it is. But anyway, yeah, so they got fooled over there in the East Coast. It turns out that he brings back William Bratton. You know, if you remember him from L.A., because he's the man who, from what I'm understanding, actually wrote Stop and Frisk. Because remember, you know, what's been going on in England, that they've been having problems. He's part of that now. He's over there as an advisor. I can't remember the name of the brother, the one that caused all the riots for about 3 days in Tottenham. I can't remember his name, but, you know, they brought Bratton in. They brought back the Met, because, you know, the Met and Scotland Yard cannot handle their own business now. You know, I don't understand why Englishmen, you know, like these Looney Tunes that run about in the English Defense League, right? You know, they're supposed to be the new British movement, right? You remember them? Right? Remember them? National Front. Remember all this? I mean, you know, the hell with them. You know, while they're complaining about all of the people who are coming in from the countries that they've conquered, and they want to talk about empire all the goddamn time, right? You know, now that they're coming to London, now that they're coming to Manchester, what have you, and they're staying, you know, I mean, they're in Nottingham. I mean, they've been there, right? I mean, you got niggas in Wales, right? Right? You know, all throughout Scotland. So, you know, it's like, come on, man. Come on. Accept it. Accept it. The world is changing, and it's changing because of the way you made it. But see, I still have to ask myself, though, as somebody who has some kind of goddamn pride in being British, that you can't even, you know, do your own police work now, that you have to, you know, go to Americans. When you see all of the chaos that's happening in the United States in terms of mass incarceration, in terms of people who are being, stop and frisk, which is bad enough, and then you have every 28 hours somebody's losing their life in a confrontation, which half the time, this is somebody who hadn't even done anything. Malcolm X grassrootsreport.org. You don't believe me. Look it up. Every 28 hours. Look it up. If you think that this is this isn't a problem, that this is a trick, that some old time nigga bullshit, right? Oscar Grant, you know, that was just isolated. Sean Bell was just isolated. Ayanna Jones was isolated. Derrick Jones was isolated. Trayvon Martin was isolated, right? Kenneth Chamberlain was isolated. Marlon Jones was isolated. What's the name of that brother who suffocated in the back of the goddamn squad car? That was isolated, right? All of these cases are isolated. All of these black people dying in custody. Haven't even been found guilty. Haven't even seen a judge. You know, and what was the name of that other cat who was handcuffed behind his back? He was searched twice, but somehow he managed to shoot himself in the head in the back of the squad car. Nobody knows how it happened. No real investigation. Nobody's being held accountable. You have people dying in custody. You have people being held for years. Another young man, East Coast, over where de Blasio, or whatever his name is the new mayor now, or he's about to come in. I don't know when they make the switch. Or did they make the switch? I don't know. I haven't seen anything in the Times, so I just don't remember reading it. Anyways. This young man, they took him in at 16. They held him for 3 years. He didn't see a judge. He was never charged. He was accused of robbing somebody. But then it turned out that he didn't do anything. He wasn't charged. They sent him to the joint. He spent a lot of that time in solitary. No sorry. No, this should never have happened. You know, no, that this is an injustice. He was black, of course. But no, you know, Barack Obama has the audacity to go to South Africa, take selfies at a fucking funeral. And I'm including the chick from Denmark and fucking Cameron, you know. Cameron, whose family made their money on the slave trade. Don't believe me. This is documented. Go to The Guardian, UK, and the BBC. And look, the family of David Cameron made their money selling slaves from Africa. And look up the history of Barack Obama. His mama's family owned and sold slaves. So I don't know what was up with the leader from Denmark, but she's just grinning and taking selfies. And instead of really talking about the improper way to handle yourself as a goddamn head of state, especially somebody that wants to control the entire fucking planet, this is how you handle yourself at the state at a state funeral for Nelson goddamn Mandela, and you're black? And I'm supposed to respect you? As a black man, how can I? Is that really supposed to be goddamn leadership? What kind of example is this to black men? You know, the ones that you tell to take off their bedroom slippers and get out there and do something. What kind of example is that? That our hero, at the state funeral that his country is giving for him, the entire black world is crying. And Barack Obama goes to the funeral and he's hanging out and taking selfies. Because, you know, the whole thing was supposed to be about Michelle Obama, right? You know, because she made a face. Well, we don't know what she was really making faces over. And yeah, it didn't look good. But at the same time, it looked to me that if she was making faces over them doing that, she was in her correct. She was in pocket. How else can I say? She was in pocket. You know what I'm saying? You can be out of line, but you can't be out of pocket, man. I mean, come on. So, you know, what this is saying to, you know, black men is that, you know, you can act like a fool anywhere you go, and people just have to accept it. So this is why, you know, we should not be surprised when Kanye West says some bullshit like, I'm the next Mandela. Let me repeat that. Kanye West, who everybody thinks is some kind of fucking genius, says that he is the next Mandela. And now that Mandela is pretty much out of the way, he can step forward and fill that spot. That he's on the same goddamn level as Brother Nelson Mandela. And we're supposed to take this motherfucker seriously. That's a little difficult for me. Take a motherfucker seriously that's going to say some shit like that. I mean, you know, look here, man. You know, there's nothing personal about this, man. You know, I'm not, you know, like hating on anybody. You know, because it's going to be said anyway, and it's probably pointless of me to even point that out because someone's going to say, oh, man, you just mad because you don't have that money. Oh, you just mad because you got that little 5-cent podcast. You know, nobody knows who you are. You don't have the fame, right? Nobody cares. No, that's not what it is. It really isn't. And see, and you got to get past all of that rah-rah to even see what the hell is going on. You know, I mean, how many of you talk Malcolm all the time? Oh, you know, Malcolm X this, Malcolm X that. You know, Dr. King, right? You know, if you're to the assimilationist, you know, you want to get along with everybody's side, right? But how many of you brothers who are so hard? Malcolm X. Malcolm X said what? Just because you can sit at a lunch counter, just because you can share a restroom, doesn't mean that you're equal. If you can't do what he does, you're not equal. You're not equal. And when you have someone like Kanye West, I mean, he's a performer. And again, I'm going back to Malcolm X. Somebody called me a liar. What did he say? We are the only people in the world. Talking about Africans in the United States. We are the only people in the world on this planet that you can take musicians, you can take entertainers, you can take a comedian, and they become leaders of their entire goddamn community. So if you got the number one show from being Housewife's Choice, like Oprah Winfrey, that's not a diss to Oprah Winfrey, that's a what is. She's Housewife's Choice. She is not offensive to these white people. She is not coming up there with dreadlocks. I'm not talking about studio locks, I'm talking about dreadlocks, right? She's not coming up there wearing, you know, African clothing. She's not wearing kente cloth in her show. She doesn't start off and end with segues of African music or drums or anything. She's not like Gil Noble, right? Gil Noble, like it is. He started off African and he ended African. You dig what I'm saying? He was one of the inspirations for this show. You know, he used to come on when I was in Newark, man, and, you know, it was something on Sundays to watch his show. Okay? He was black from beginning to end, and it wasn't one of these, oh, I'm blacker than you, super black, and, you know, I hate all white folks. No. No, it wasn't about that. It wasn't about that. And like I said, you cats that got that problem, man, you know, you really need to get your heads reconfigured and find out what's really going on. I'm all about self-love, you dig? But I don't have to hate anybody to love myself and love my own people. See, the problem is when, you know, we are so hurt that we can't even see the humanity in somebody else. And when I'm not talking about some kumbaya thing, man. And you know, and being geeky, you know, that's an important little phrase for me. But that's another thing. You know, well, what I'm saying is the real African revolutionary, if we're going to go that far, if we're going to talk like that, if we're going to talk about Fred Hampton Sr., if we're going to talk about what the Black, you know, Panther Party for Self-Defense was talking about when they began to think internationally, right? We're talking about progressive movements. We're not talking about militancy per se. We're talking about progressive movements. You know, I mean, we've done shows on this, and it's like just about every activist that I've had up here, very few of them are married to their own, you know, ethnic group. You know, the majority of the editors for the Aboriginal News Group are not married to people from their own ethnic group. I'm not married to someone from any of my ethnic groups, really. Lupe's not married to anybody from her ethnic group. You dig what I'm saying? I mean, David Sheen, the journalist, is catching some heat right now because he's really pointing out the hate that's going on in Israel. I mean, he and Max Blumenfeld, but I like David Sheen because I know him, you know. And, you know, he's not married to, he's married to an Israeli, but I mean, he's not married to a Caucasian. He's married to an African woman. You know, and you know, we see the humanity in each other. See, you know, it's the hardcore xenophobes, right? Because they're not really conservatives. They're xenophobes. All they see is what they see because they're afraid when they see something else. Now, at the same time, having said that, we got a society right now that's in serious flux. And this is why what's going on with Obama and, you know, how he's been acting and carrying on during the fallout here from the passing of Nelson Mandela. You know, when you have all of these freakouts with the white supremacists in Africa, in the United States and Canada, talking about, oh, you know, this is going to be this, you know, massacre of Caucasians across the continent. And of course, this isn't happening. There hasn't been anything like this. There hasn't been anything like this. Now, yes, we have fools amongst us, but we don't act like this. We do not act like this. Like I said, it's the cutthroats that run the world, that really control the planet. You know, it's the cutthroats that really control the planet. And they make it their business to use intimidation, to use fear, to use violence, to use, you know, the use of overwhelming odds against people who cannot defend themselves. I mean, think about it. As much as they hate North Korea, right? Everybody hates North Korea. How come nobody's jumped on North Korea? You noticed that, haven't you? You know, same thing with Iran. You know, I'm still trying to, you know, to get from people, somebody needs to explain to me, what is it that Iran has done that the United States hates Iran? And the only thing I can think of is the takeover of Iran when Mossadegh was moved, the socialist was moved out, right? And the combined forces of the U.S. and the U.K. put the Shah in office because he was in Europe hanging out. There was nothing Persian about him by the time he got back. Believe that, man. He was very Europocentrized by the time he got back. I mean, he was a European. Where was he living? In Switzerland or something? I mean, he was hanging out in Europe. He was drinking coffee. He was smoking cigarettes and hanging out in cafes. You know, just living off his wealth. He wasn't doing nothing. But they needed to replace the socialist with somebody, right? So they put him in. And he had a deal going on with Saudi and Israel. And, you know, they made it seem like they were bickering all the time. But basically, they were keeping the oil flowing. You know, while they were stomping on everybody else in the meantime, you know. But, hey, you know, that's another thing. And, you know, we could talk about that. But, you know, what are we talking about here? You know, Mandela was representative of all of this. And to have Obama come up and say that he was some sort of an inspiration to him is hypocrisy. With everything that's going on under his watch, nothing's been stopped. There's only been exacerbated, right? So, it's only been sped up. It's only been made larger and more entrenched. This has nothing to do with Mandela. Absolutely nothing to do with Mandela. And the fact that the left is allowing this to happen without very much in the way of pushback is ridiculous. But then, like I said, for somebody who's going to lecture the African community all the time, he can't speak up for black men. I mean, that was a real, Bush the second move to take a selfie at the funeral for Nelson Mandela. When Ariel Sharon, when they finally cut him off of the machine that's keeping him going, and all of these world leaders attend his memorial or funeral services, do you really think they're going to be taking selfies? Do you really think any Jew in the world who shows up to that, or any other world leader, is going to be taking a selfie doing a funeral for an Israeli politician? Or politician, better yet, like somebody like Shimon Peres, right? I mean, what did he used to do when he, Ergun? What was he, Haganah? You know, he was part of the resistance. There's not one person that's in government today of a certain age group, of a certain generation, that was not part of the resistance. That's how they got their positions. You know how this goes. Everybody that was part of the revolt, the revolution, the coup, the war, they all get a seat. All those commanders get a seat. They get a job someplace. You know, they're not doing that for ideals? Are you kidding? Read up about the Stern Gang. Ergun, Lehi, the Haganah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, you know, they'll keep telling you all day long about the Grand Mufti, but, you know, talk about what's going on with, what did I say, Shimon Peres? Well, he was one of them. He wasn't the only one. Yitzhak Rabin. I mean, could you imagine somebody taking a selfie at Yitzhak Rabin's funeral? And, you know, I saw the film of that. We've all saw it on the news. You know, do you really believe it went down the way they say it did? I don't know. It doesn't seem like anybody stopped that cat. You dig what I'm saying? That's supposed to be the best security in the fucking world. And it didn't seem like anybody was, you know, how did he get that close? I don't understand that. I don't understand. It's the same thing I say for you suckers that, you know, Tupac this and Biggie that, you know, this East Coast, West Coast nonsense. I mean, here it is. He's got all this goddamn security surrounded by all these people sitting there with his wife. I mean, come on, man. Come on, man. You believe it went down like that? There's a lot of rumors, right? You believe that? You know, all of this stuff. I mean, come on. We just finished looking at the Kennedy affair. You know, what does it mean when people still believe the official story? How can anybody believe the Warren Report? How can anybody believe the Warren Report? And nobody even wants to talk about the Church Committee now. With everything that's going on with the privacy issues, globally, worldwide, not just here, across the world. I mean, they're doing this everywhere. But we've had the Church Committee. And what happened? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. So, you know, Obama comes in and everybody figures, well, here's this black man, right? What did Evo Morales from Bolivia say? Here's this black man. He's going to do the right thing, hopefully. You know, Castro, Dr. Castro, everybody was like, we're going to give this cat a break. We're going to see what he does. We're going to see what he does. What's happened? What's happened? You tell me. What's happened, brothers and sisters? So how are we going to talk about Mandela in the middle of all of this? How are we seriously going to, with straight faces and with clear consciences, with straight faces and clear minds, and say that we're being for real when we're talking about Nelson Mandela and we're talking about Barack Obama? You can't. It's impossible. It's impossible. And when you have people like Kanye West saying what the hell he said, he couldn't hold Mandela's jockstrap. It's like, it was just completely it's not even like it's out of bounds, man. There are no goddamn boundaries anymore, right? And like I said, what kind of example is this for, the head of the most powerful, the head of Pax Americana, taking selfies at the funeral of a man as great as Nelson Mandela, who he claims was an inspiration? You really think Mandela would carry himself like that at the state funeral of a hero to an entire race of people? And yeah, if you get mad with me saying that he was a hero for black people, like I said, you don't have to listen to the show anymore, you dig? You don't have to follow me on Twitter, you don't have to follow any of the sites. I'm not speaking for the Aboriginal News Group, I'm speaking for me. You don't have to come around anymore. I'm tired of having these people taken from us. I'm tired of having my history rearranged so that white people feel comfortable at my table. It's not like I'm a bit fed up with it. I'm fed up with it, and I'm not having it anymore. And neither should you, brother and sister. And if you're really, a white person who is conscious, who is really, down with the movement, understands what all of this is about, understands that this isn't personal, this isn't about you, right? And if you can accept leadership from us in terms of, try and actually work out these problems, I'm welcome to talk to you. Drop me a line here at the studio, Aboriginal Radio with a Y, at gmx.se. There's Aboriginal Radio, there's Radio with a Y, at gmx.se. Let's sit and talk about it. We can sit and we can talk about it. We can gravitate on it, and we can come up with some ideas, and hopefully we can come up with, some sort of guidance out there for people in terms of, how to have these conversations, why we should have these conversations, why it's overdue, that not so much that we say what we say, but that we actually do what it is that we're supposedly talking about all the time. We can't come out here and talk about that somehow we've arrived, right? That the struggle is over, that we're really in this supposedly post-colonial era, when that's nonsense. And if you're really if you're really intent on convincing yourself of that, then really, I will never be able to prove a negative to you, because you've already got your mind made up. You'd be like that black Republican Eric Rush talking about he knows people who wish in South Africa who wish apartheid was back. Well, I mean, come on, Nick Kristof in, I believe it was the New York Times, he managed to find one black person, I guess one, some old man in Zimbabwe now, who wished that the old Rhodesian system was back up, that Ian Smith was, back in place, back in power, doing his old thing. Now, I mean, if you go around and you keep looking until you find one, yeah, you're going to find some kiss ass that's going to say something like that. Of course you're going to find that, instead of actually pushing their leaders to do something. But then again, we got to consider, are these people in positions to do anything? I mean, how many people blame the Vietnamese folks, those rice farmers over there, for the invasion, right? First of the French and then of the U.S. How many people blame them that if they had stood up against their communist leaders, then we wouldn't have to do this? Or if they stood up against Saddam, then we wouldn't have had to do this. If they stood up against Gaddafi, then we wouldn't have had to do this. What kind of nonsense is that? Especially when you're living in Aurelianville right now, right? we can't even move here. You can't go and, you know, have a tryst someplace without somebody having it, you know, in private hands, you know, cataloged and stored somewhere forever, basically. You know, I mean, anybody can be discredited now with personal information basically at any time. You know, I mean, ask people in the Occupy movement. Right? You know, there were certain things that were going around with them. People safe in the banking community and a certain, you know, bureau knew about it and didn't tell them. And evidently didn't prosecute the people who were conspiring like this. But we're told not to worry. You know, in a world after COINTELPRO. Like I said, look up the Church Committee hearings. Frank Church, he was the senator from Idaho. Don't believe me. That was the same round of hearings when they found out that two generations of Native American women here in the United States, you know, were sterilized against their knowledge, against their will. That's genocide, right? Was anybody ever held accountable for that? Absolutely not. If anything, there were certain people who were attached to the Indian Health Service at that time who were given promotions. So you figure it out. You tell me, brother and sister, what the hell you think is going on? We want to talk about Mandela? We're going to let David Cameron talk about Mandela? We're going to let Sarkozy and all these other people talk about Mandela? You know, Gilyard talk about Mandela? How? The black community's going for this. Why? And we allow Kanye West to say the most stupid things imaginable. And he's supposed to be a leader. He's the next Mandela, right? And Jay-Z, who's like, you know, his presence is charity. And both of them, they're still doing business with Barney's, even though they don't want niggas to shop there. So, you know, what does that tell you? What does that tell you? When you see black women trying to be blonde with these green and light blue contacts, bleaching their skin, what does that tell you? Asian women surgically rounding their eyes, bleaching their hair, what does this tell you? Right? And then we got Spanish speaking Latin America, right? Portuguese speaking Latin America, right? Because they're not doing it in Creole land over in Haiti, right? They can't stand African people. But yet they're all getting their asses plumped up, right? Everybody wants, you know, huge poompies all of a sudden. So, you know, it's like, okay. You know, I mean, especially in, you would think, well, Brazil already got natural, you know, natural healthy people, you know. But when you go to, you know, like Colombia and what have you, where all the drug money is, these young women are getting all kinds of surgery, man. Faces, cleavage. Took us, you know, to try to attract these men with money and then think that, well, hey, you know, that's it. I'll have everything I need now. There's no need for me to be educated. There's no need for me to fight for my social and civil and human rights, right? Or my rights as a woman. No, you know, I need to be seen and get in videos and win these contests and attract the rich man. And then that's it. And then I'd just be a society woman. I mean, no, we're all living in this damn fantasy. And, you know, we're looking at the internet. And the internet is an important tool, but we see what's happening with that. And we see it's being crammed in more crapola than real information. You know, and it turns out that African people are spending a lot of time online, which is cool, but they're not doing any education. It's the same thing when they're looking at the big screen, right? At the boob tube. Isn't that what they call it in the States? At the boob tube, right? When they're looking at the telly, what are they looking at? Sports, entertainment, music. And when they do look at news, they're looking at Fox News. I mean, what the hell does that tell you? You can go and get the stats out here. You know, I mean, it's publicly available information. They'll even break it down by ethnic group. You can find out what the Asians in the U.S. are watching and when, right? Spanish-speaking people. I mean, it's there. And what are we doing? Nothing. And when we go online, what are we doing? Nothing. Just putting out stupid things, right? You know, and then, you know, putting out rumors, thinking that's going to, you know, spark some kind of, you know, mental revolution out here. It's like, you know, like Lazarus or something and shit. Raising the dead, you know, like, witch conspiracy. That the first president of the United States was black, you know. getting wrong. John Hansen's, you know, all confused and shit. You know, and then don't want to hear that they're wrong. Right? Don't want to hear that they're wrong. All that the John Hansen's on the $2 bill and what have you. I mean, there's others out there. We're not going to get into them today. But, you know, we're concentrating on nonsense like this. You know, urban myths or whatever the hell they call them. Right? Instead of really looking at this black man who insults the NAACP membership, the entire black community, every time he gets a chance in front of a microphone. And then he goes and takes a selfie, you know, at the funeral for Nelson Mandela. And we're not supposed to be embarrassed, but all white folks can talk about, and white feminists, basically, is about Michelle Obama's face. You know, basically, you know, asking if her Geechee came out while he was sitting there taking selfies with Cameron and the president or prime minister, whatever it is from Denmark. Yeah, I know, I'm being redundant. Because it's irritating, because he represents every black man in the world. Whether he wants to accept that or not, whether he wants to play that, well, you know, Charles Barkley kind of shit, well, you know, I'm my own nigga. And, you know, I can do what I want and what I do. I don't, you know, reflect every black man in the world. Well, yes, you do. See, when Bill Clinton was up there, he spoke for himself. You know, when Slick Willie was up there and Jennifer Flowers and all that was starting to unravel, you know, he was up there, Paula Jones would have, which I still don't believe that one. But, you know, anything with Linda Tripp, you know, is just that. It's a trip, right? So, you know, hey, man. You know, Ken Starr, that whole Federalist thing, you know, I mean, it was just like a big bullshit scam. I mean, look, Bill Clinton was the best moderate Republican president the United States has ever goddamn had, and he left money in the till when he left, and I was able to get a job easier at decent pay and have something left over when he was in office. You know, now everybody's hustling. Everybody's hustling. Everybody's hustling. Everybody's scrambling for the same nickel. So you don't know. No. You know, because Bush the second came in and, you know, all of that money disappeared and we're completely broke. And then you had the subprime scandal, which basically broke the world's goddamn economy. Because that's what all this austerity thing is about, because they had convinced the entire world, I suppose, or most of Europe anyway, to buy into the housing market here, stateside. And when that failed, because they were cheating every goddamn buddy, it just bounced around the world, right? It just bounced around the world, man, like a bad wind. He's painting cats right now. So, hey, it is what it is, right? You know, I mean, we went from one to the other, and people think that something happened, and nothing happened. Nothing happened. And obviously, Mandela, there wasn't too much in those last years he could do. He did everything that he could do and left it up to us, I suppose, to, you know, continue on with this. But we didn't. We didn't. You know, I mean, the proof of that is watching the floor show with Obama, man. You know. At this funeral, taking selfies. And, you know, I don't think someone has to be an Afrocentric, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, man. I have a problem with all of this, you dig? I don't see the need for it. It's embarrassing. Whether he wants to accept it or not, you know. Every black man in the world right now looks like a fucking clown. I mean, look, do I have to remind you, brother and sister, that he boycotted the Durban 2 conference? Well, he boycotted two of them, anti-racism conferences, right? He boycotted two of them. So, no, man, yeah, I can't accept this. You shouldn't accept this. Because, you know, no other ethnic group. Well, that's not true. What am I talking about? That's not true. It depends on who's calling the shots in those groups, right? I mean, we'll just be embarrassed. And, of course, you know, this will reflect on us when we go to get jobs or when we have to deal out here in the world. And, try to get some respect from our peers, but evidently our peers don't really care, because again, everybody's scrambling for the same nickel, you know, because you're put into a position where you can't operate any other way. You can't operate any other way. So when we talk about, you know, human freedom, and we want to talk about Mandela, and we want to talk about, you know, who was allowed to come speak at Mandela's funeral, but Goodluck Jonathan of Nigeria wasn't able to speak. Nah. We need to do a lot of self-reflection, man. We need to be asking a lot of questions about who the black man is and what the black man is about. And, you know, for you sisters to think I'm coming down on you, man, you know, because, you know, those of you straighten your hair and bleach your hair and go through all this. No, I'm not coming down on you. I'm pointing out that there's a problem. There's a problem when you don't like yourself. There's a problem when, and don't think that I'm some kind of, you know, that I've gotten through it. No, I still look in the mirror and say, damn, man, you know, why is my nose like this? Why are my lips like this? You know, what if my hair was straighter, right? So, you know, we have to, you know, we hate ourselves, man. And when we see those who are supposed to represent us and they act in a uncouth manner, it reflects on everybody. It reflects on all of us. You know, it reflects on the entire African family. Because when a white man speaks, he speaks for himself. Yeah, but when a black man speaks, he speaks for all black men. Now, that line was from the late Gil Noble, and I've always remembered it because it's true. This is The Angry Indian, and you're listening to Intelligent Average for Asia.
It is an ideal which I hope to live for. And land to achieve. But if needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die.
Don't let the colonial occupation blues get you down. Listen to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The podcast for intelligent aboriginals.
HIV संक्रमितहरूलाई माया, ममता र समाजमा सम्मानित जीवन जिउने वातावरण निर्माण गरौं।
यो उनीहरूको अपेक्षा होइन, अधिकार हो।
रोगलाई तिरस्कार र बहिष्कार गरौं, रोगीलाई होइन। HIV अरूलाई मात्र होइन, तपाईलाई पनि लाग्न सक्छ।
सकारात्मक सोच, स्वस्थ समाज अनि सही निर्णय नै सरल तथा सफल जीवन हो।
सामाजिक रूपान्तरणका लागि गगन गृहको एउटा प्रयास।
Let me ask you a very simple question. Does it concern you that the government is spying on you? 30 years ago, to even ask this question would have been a scandal. If you lived through Watergate, if you read the Church Committee reports, you know the costs of unchecked government surveillance. The government is exploiting our amnesia. We did not pass the Fourth Amendment in order to protect those with something to hide. We passed that amendment, which prohibits general warrants or limitless surveillance, because we know all too well the cost of an unaccountable government. The question is not, do you have something to hide? The question is whether we control government or the government controls us. Remember, this struggle is part of who we are as a people. This country was born in rebellion because the British government was exerting too much control over American lives. We broke free and began to create a system of government meant to protect liberty. Our national history reveals a constant struggle to stay true to this value. We face one of those moments of struggle right now. Recent leaks have given us a glimpse into our government's gigantic surveillance machine. It's a machine that is eating our freedom. If this concerns you, and it should, you need to contact your representatives in Congress now. Ask them to end the tracking of Americans' domestic communications. I won't stand idly by while our civil liberties are eaten by the NSA's surveillance machine. You shouldn't either.
Hello, this is Susan Aglukak. The first week of December is Aboriginal AIDS Awareness Week. Learn the ways you can protect yourself and others from infection and spreading HIV. Together, we can make a difference.
Voices Indigenous Radio brings to you the basics of how not to violate the law and presents the people who are fighting the war against Mother Earth. We bring the awareness of a different paradigm to the airwaves of WBAI as we shed the same old systematic paradigm that is killing Mother Earth. And you can hear the perspective of Indigenous peoples throughout the world and how they live with the law, land, air, and water. First Voices Indigenous Radio is produced in the studios of WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming and archived on WBAI.org and FirstVoicesIndigenousRadio.org.
General Clapper, would you agree on saying that having access to public information is not an act of espionage?
Yes.
Would you, with your experience in intelligence matters, describe Cuba as a military threat for the United States?
Absolutely not. Cuba does not represent a threat.
Did you find any evidence indicating that Geraldo Hernandez was trying to obtain secret information?
No, not that I recognized.
Did you, General Clapper, come across any secret national defense information that was transmitted to Cuba by Geraldo Hernandez or the other defendants?
Not that I remember, no.
I'm not a lawyer. I'm Danny Glover, activist and actor. We just did a scene from the trial of the Cuban Five, who are doing long sentences for fighting terrorism. I hope that you would join us in this effort to support them and free them. It is a very just cause.
I'm not General Clapper. My name's Peter Coyote. I'm an actor and a politically engaged citizen. I hope you'll take a few minutes to learn something about the case of the Cuban Five. It's a grievous injustice and a stain on our national honor.
Go ahead, ready?
I'm Forrest Whitaker for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and this is my daughter, True.
Hi.
Life is full of choices, and many years ago, I chose to become a vegetarian, and it's one of the best choices I've ever made. And since True's dad was a vegetarian, she decided to be vegetarian, too. You may decide to go vegetarian for better health, for a better environment, or you could be like True and I and just decide you don't want to eat meat anymore.
I love animals and I love being a vegetarian.
I'm Forrest Whitaker.
And I'm True Whitaker.
And we're vegetarians.
For more information, visit PETA.org.
Hi, I'm Sophia Banks. I'm from Toronto, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Internet radio for smart and originals.
This is APNS Public Radio.
I say I hate you first. You're the first line I hate. I hate all white people. White people are rotten. And black people are just like them. Because you've made them just exactly like you. They walk like you, they talk like you, everything they do is like you. They want to be you so much. They love your woman more than you do. They know your mind better than you. They wear your clothes. They've even learned to wear your shoes. You kick them out of the jungle, and you want to make them into a man. Why couldn't they be left to be God? Why do you want to make them into a man? In the jungle, they were God. Africans are smart, aren't they? When you're over here, everybody thinks them old black people are just dumb old colored folks. But they're not dumb old colored folks. They're very smart. They're very aware. And their capacity for fear is three times what yours.
And I know it. Yes. Whoa. No. Sheer Matar.
Blessed love one and all.
To the world. Yeah.
Another Wednesday. Conscious Vibes. www.saharafmradio.com. The platform where we come together to share our thoughts on salient issues. The way you will not hear the technocrats and the bureaucrats and the politicians and the so-called men of authority discuss it. This is us discussing it from our own point of view. Yeah. Let me say this though. Very likely. Anyhow, it's cut to chase. The world mourns a great man, Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela. Forgive my pronunciation. That's the best I can do with that name. But yeah, the world mourns a great man in the person of Nelson Mandela, who passed away just last week. When you describe Nelson Mandela as a great man, though, it gets different reactions from different people depending on who you're speaking with. Some see him as the greatest African of our time, others not so much. What really was the legacy of Nelson Mandela? Is Nelson Mandela a figure that represents peace and reconciliation, or he just represents compromise? Again, it depends who you are asking. On People's Parliament Unconscious Vibes today, I have a crack team to help me crack this nut. On the line right now, we have the Director of Research and Planning for the Division of Student Affairs at the Columbia University, John Osai Kwapong.
Hi.
We also have journalist. He doesn't really want to be called journalist, but forgive me, Femi, I don't have too many words to describe you. Femi Akomolafe.
Yeah.
We also have...
Thank you very much.
We also have Sadia Nuhu. Sadia is an activist and a voice for the voiceless. I like to refer to her as that. She's firebrand, trust me. And then we have Kwesi Boateng, a linguist from Ghana. You're welcome, lady and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay. Now let's start straight away. I'm going to ask one question, which I want just a straight answer from you before we go into the main discussion. Let me start with you, John. Nelson Mandela, hero or traitor?
Hero.
Sadia?
The word traitor is too harsh. But I'll go there.
Okay. Kwesi? Kwesi? Hello, Kwesi? Uh-oh, we dropped Kwesi Boateng. I hope we're able to raise him back as soon as possible. But yeah, Femi, Nelson Mandela, hero or traitor?
I don't think we agreed to reduce him to such simplistic terms, please. I'm sorry.
Okay.
He's no hero of mine. He's a hero to some extent, but we consider him a great hero.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay, now let's get down to the basics. John.
Yes.
Nelson Mandela. His death created a platform where exceptional things like the president of the U.S. shaking hands and hugging on the president of Cuba happened. What would you say catapulted Nelson Mandela to that level? Why is he getting so much acclaim and attention from the world?
Okay, and if I may just backtrack for one just quick second.
Yes.
I'm never a big fan of either or propositions, right? It gets very tricky when you say is a person either X or Y.
Yeah.
But generally, I think that the reason why I do tend to agree with those who ascribe heroic status to Nelson Mandela, and all the acclamations and all the outpouring of great words that is being given to him upon his death, I think, as you and I and everybody on the panel knows, I think stems a lot from what people see as a genuine, or having been part of a genuine struggle. I think the key event, particularly in Nelson Mandela's life, was the 27 years that he spent in jail. I think that sort of raised his flashes, became a symbol of the struggle that he was part of, and others see it as, or I say, sort of like a personal sacrifice he had to endure in order to pursue, quote unquote, some greater good. And then having come out of jail and continuing with negotiations, eventually at least overseeing an initial transition, the beginning of a crack opening of, you know, the apartheid system, things like that. And so I think all of those things culminating with him just serving one term in office, etc., created this sort of appreciation for the kind of man that he was, which is why I think a lot of people mourn him with such accolades and ascribe heroic status to him.
Interesting. Now, Sadia, you were a bit skeptical about addressing him as a hero. Why is that?
Well, I would say that Mandela paid his dues at some point in time. So Mandela, before prison,
27 years of prison, Mandela was a hero. Well, to be in prison for 27 years is not an easy task. So I would say that process softened him, and he made some compromise, you know, with the powers that be, for him to be released and stand for elections. For me, that's why he's a hero of the powers that raised him. But it's okay for us to forgive. It's okay for us to represent peace. Because, you know, retaliation and war doesn't solve any problem. So, okay, that was fine, what he did. But then, the masses, the suffering masses of South Africa are still suffering. So I feel like he could have done more. And a lot of the compromises that he made makes me stand the position that I take, especially with Winnie Mandela. You know, if he could forgive all the powers, why couldn't he forgive the woman that he was struggling side by side with? His sister, let's just even put it that way. So that's where I come from.
Now, that's a very deep point. If he can forgive someone who put him in prison for 27 years, why couldn't he forget someone who was there waiting for him? That's a very interesting point. But let me go to Femi at this point. Femi, what's your own thoughts on Nelson Mandela?
Please, you mentioned Barack Obama shaking hands with Raul Castro. Yeah. I think in Africa, we get serious, honestly. Why should we be... Why should we be impressed by those type of gestures, man? Huh? What is our business? Honestly, the adulation, I feel outraged when I saw the proceedings, actually. Why was Obama invited to come and give a speech and not the Nigerian president or even the Palestinian leader? Obama was not the friend of the United States.
Of South Africa.
America didn't lift a finger to help him. Nigeria did a lot for that to get him released. No, honestly, we are in Africa. We're just so mesmerized by gestures and all these fakeries. It's time we get serious. As Sadia rightly said, why should we be? Of course, every death of an elderly person must be celebrated in Africa in our culture.
Well, for
but
me,
this is, who was prepared to forgive those who jailed him for 27 years? But I wasn't prepared to forgive his own wife. Let's get serious, please.
Yes, Femi, but let me get something clear, though. I wasn't saying that Obama shaking hands with Raul Castro had any benefit for Africans. I was just saying that a man whose death could actually bring two violently opposing forces together.
We should recognize hypocrisy when we see one, please. What did Mandela stood for? He stood for forgiveness. Obama is still bombing people in Yemen. He's still bombing people in Afghanistan. Let's recognize hypocrisy when we see one, please. They give a lot of speeches.
Okay.
They give a lot of nice speeches. But the one thing Mandela stood for is forgiveness. Let me say something here. Mandela will never become a leader in any Western country. They will consider him a wimp. Let us be serious. They will not vote for him.
Okay.
Now they are giving speeches, adulating him, praising him to high levels. They will never, when he was in jail, what did they do for him? They didn't leave the seat.
Point me. John.
Okay, so, Femi and Sadia, my only question is, you guys have raised the issue of if he could forgive those who perpetrated all these crimes against him and Africans, why couldn't he forgive his wife, right? I'm just wondering, why couldn't he forgive his wife? Are you saying that within the context of he should have still stayed married and not have divorced Winnie? Because I don't see his divorce from Winnie as a refusal to forgive Winnie Mandela. For all you know, and from everything that has happened, I wouldn't be surprised even if after their divorce, there was still some reconciliation between them. And so I'm just not clear as to why that becomes sort of an indictment of the fact that we call him the forgiven person because he divorced his wife.
It is quite simple, please. It's quite simple. Without Winnie Mandela, we would not even know about Mandela. No, honestly, she kept him in the limelight.
Uh-huh.
Serious. Let's go back to the historical things. I mean, it was Winnie Mandela that kept the flame going. It was Winnie Mandela that made us know about Mandela.
Yes.
He was in jail.
Okay. All right.
Most of these people who were prison were abandoned him. Serious.
Let's move the discussion forward. Talking about forgiveness. Uh-huh. Mandela seems to be so huge because he had the capacity to forgive, or at least so it looks like.
Yes.
Is there anything more that we can you know put on his plate apart from his capacity to forgive? And then even that forgiveness, is it to the benefit of his people? That so-called forgiveness that he is being, eulogized for, is it really to the benefit of his people, or was it a compromise that was just in you know, like bad direction? Let me take Sadia first.
Oh, okay, thank you. Well, you know, that's the question. That's what we're coming to. Is that I said earlier, he forgave. Forgiveness is fine, but I don't see how that forgiveness has changed the lives of the people that were oppressed for so many years, who were brutalized, killed, maimed, living in abject poverty. Okay? So the forgiveness is okay. I don't have a problem with the forgiveness. But what outcome came for the suffering people of South Africa that what do they have to show for that forgiveness? With Mandela, the way the whole world is praising him and saying he is whatever he is now, if he had that influence, he could have used that same influence to call people together and say, you know what, let's build some schools in this community, let's build some apartments in these communities, let's build some hospitals in these communities, let's restructure, let's rebuild, you know, and distribute resources equally to those who are suffering. I didn't see anything like that. So, in fact, I cannot celebrate and jubilate that he's such a hero and he forgave. The forgiveness, I don't see how my people are benefiting from that kind of forgiveness. So, you know, in order to not make it a long story, that's my position on that. You know, people died. Everything was taken away from them.
Then
he had a lot of influence. That influence is true, if the powers that are praising him are really sincere, then you could have pulled those people together and made them, I'm not saying take away from those who already have, but we could have built more due to that influence.
Oprah
Winfrey went to South Africa and built a school, and all these celebrities that have so much money, you know, all worship Mandela. So Mandela could have said, okay, you know what, can you help us to build this and that and this and that?
I believe that at least some schools and some hospitals and stuff have been built. I believe what you're saying, though, is that it's not up to your expectation. Let me ask John, why does it always have to be us who have to forgive? There was a Holocaust. There was a so-called, I wouldn't say so-called, let me call it a Holocaust because we know what it was. In Israel, so many people were killed and stuff like that. The world, humanity, is constantly reminded of, you know, about this. The 9/11, the Second World War, Hitler's atrocities, all of that. We're constantly reminded about this. Why is it that Africans have to forgive apartheid to the point where nobody is being blamed at all for it? John?
And I do agree to an extent with Sadia's point on this whole issue of forgiveness, which for me, after the death of Nelson Mandela, has also been my struggle. I mean, I've had the occasion to ask two different people whose views I really respect as to, because from what I've been struggling with, it seemed as though forgiveness and justice and restoration were sort of opposing values, right?
Yep.
That you couldn't have both.
Yep.
That if we wanted forgiveness, we had to give up justice. Or if we wanted justice, we had to give up forgiveness. And so for me, that has been my struggle as I keep on reflecting about Nelson Mandela's death. I feel as though perhaps the price of achieving that forgiveness and reconciliation was to give up the seeking of justice for those who suffered some irreparable damages as a result of apartheid. And I'm still struggling with that question as to if he had pushed more and more for justice, what would have happened? Would it have delayed the transition? Would it have made things bloodier? And I still don't have the answers, but I do agree to an extent with Sadia. That is my struggle. Why couldn't we find a way to reconcile, you know, both? That yes, we do forgive, but again, some bad things happen that a certain price must be paid for those bad things. And maybe eventually I'll come up with the answer, but that has also been my struggle, the cost of that forgiveness to Black South Africans.
Okay. Femi, did Nelson Mandela have the right at all, to start with, to, you know, take that you know, standpoint? We forgive, we're going to move on, we're going to build a rainbow nation, nobody's going to be prosecuted, etc. Did he really have the backing of the people when he did that?
I will never know that, but what he did was neither African nor European. In our traditional African jurisprudence, people have to, when you need forgiveness, you have to show penance. Mm-hmm. You have to pay penalty. Yeah? Mm-hmm. We try to reconcile people, we try to be forgiven, but the perpetrator of the crime must show some penance. Mm-hmm. Today we have some enclave in South Africa where white people still don't allow Black people to face it. What type of forgiveness is that? They said they still want the Republic of Africana, whatever, somewhere in the middle of South Africa. It is not European, because the European jurisprudence is an eye for an eye. You break my egg, I will kill your chicken. Yeah? They don't forget. They don't forgive. They don't forget. They pursue their enemy. They pursue their enemy real or imagined.
Yes.
They pursue them. Yes. They kill them.
Yes.
They become the judge, they become the arresting officer, they become the killing machine.
Yes.
So what Mandela did was neither African nor European. Okay?
Mm.
So I don't know where he came from, but honestly, to be frank, he betrayed the trust of the people. They didn't start it by forgiving. The whole struggle was not to forgive. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
What was the struggle about? Resource control. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Why should I, after 600 years, we have been turning the other cheek, forgiving. Slavery, colonialism, apartheid, we forgive. Serious. I've run out of cheeks to turn, honestly. Why should people came to your country, steal your land, force you out, impose apartheid on you, and then suddenly they are still controlling 70 to 80% of the resources of the country, depending on who's in the calculation. And we sit down here celebrating, jumping up. Oh, serious.
But some have also said that the apartheid regime had its hand on the throat of South Africans. And if Mandela had not done what he did, there would probably still be apartheid, for instance. What's your reaction to that, Sadia?
Well, Ras Kwesi, what's his name? Lucky Dube asked a very important question. Would you rather be a well-fed slave or a hungry free man?
Mm.
You know, so that's where we stand. Should I be in my country and have justice and, you know, just those values? Or should I just, in the name of freedom or reconciliation and forgiveness, I'm still an object in my country to be discriminated against and oppressed against? When we say that there's forgiveness, even here in the United States, we're still going through discrimination, we're still going through all these things. Is that true, Jackson? Maybe we're making progress somewhere, but that's a hard question. I think that That's a hard question, though. But would you rather be a welfare slave or a hungry free man? And my brother made a point. My brother made a point when he said that, where were we going before Mandela came and said that we are forgiven? Where were we going? We were fighting for justice. We were fighting for equality. We were fighting for, you know, let me hammer on the word justice. We live in our land. Somebody comes and takes everything from us and starts giving us. So is there forgiveness? Where is the reconciliation in that?
Interesting. I, for one, would want to be a welfare free man. I don't either want to be hungry nor be a slave. But anyhow, John.
Yes.
Mandela was seen and actually described as a terrorist not too long ago. What would you say drastically changed? How did he metamorphose from being a terrorist to the most celebrated man in this time? What happened?
You know, part of that, you know, the designation of Mandela as a terrorist, as you know, goes back to at the point at which the ANC realized that peaceful protest alone was not going to get their message across to the white minority government in South Africa. And therefore, they sanctioned, you know, the armed, you know, they sanctioned an armed struggle. They recognized that you had to sort of up the stakes in the fight against apartheid. And therefore, you know, you needed a bit of an armed struggle against the regime as well. Of course, the kind of armed struggle, or should I say, the kind of weapons at the disposal of the ANC couldn't match what, you know, the white South African government had. I mean, they couldn't really match them, but at least they could create a few situations here and there to sort of press on their point. And I think it's as a result of some of those things, and you know the nature of Cold War politics, et cetera, back in then, sort of forced this designation then on Nelson Mandela as, you know, as a terrorist. And then you look at his eventual release from prison, his renunciation to a large extent of violence, you know, condemning violence and asking for a rather peaceful negotiation and transition to democratic rule, etc., etc. Help that metamorphosis in saying, oh, maybe he's not a, he's quote unquote not a terrorist anymore. Now he's a peacemaker, he's a peace loving man. But you also have to understand this within the context of international politics.
Yeah.
You know, within the context of international politics, one day somebody is an enemy, another day another person is a friend. And so sometimes some of these things meet very harsh political realities, and it doesn't make it right, but that's the political reality.
Yeah.
Okay, Femi.
I think we're forgetting something here. You mentioned that where we'll be, maybe apartheid will still be enforced in South Africa. It's important to put things in historical perspective. The decisive shift happened when South African forces were defeated in Angola by the Cuban troops. We shouldn't forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Before then, they've been acting as the invisible, all-powerful, omnipotent force in Southern Africa. When they were defeated by Angolan and Cuban troops at the Battle of Kwanapale, that is when the invisibility was broken. Then the black Africans thought that these people, they're not mighty Goliath, biblical Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
They have clear of it. That is what won independence for South Africa. They couldn't continue. So don't let us give them more praise than they actually deserve. Yeah,
well,
it is important that we know our history.
Okay, good point.
It is the armed struggle supported by the frontline states and Nigeria and some other, which honestly I feel outrage, the treatment meted out to Africans with this showish in South Africa. Honestly, we seem to forget so easily what happened. I was old enough to remember Jimmy Carter was the president then. He was constructively engaging with Buddha. When Nigerian foreign minister Joe Garba was galvanizing running around, honestly, please, I have a letter on my desk here written by General Obasanjo to Margaret Thatcher, asking her if her conscience allows her to sleep at night.
Obasanjo wrote that?
General Olusegun Obasanjo wrote the letter to Margaret Thatcher.
Interesting.
On the apartheid issue. Margaret, yeah. Do you sleep well at night? Does your conscience allow you to sleep well at night?
Wow.
I will mail a copy of the letter to you.
Please do.
These are things we should remember. Today we have democratically elected leaders in Africa who don't know their left from right.
Well,
things were done by young generals.
Well, you know, when
Papa Mugabe died, then would they be calling the people to come and sing his praise? They would forget the contributions of the other African states. No, that's not correct.
That is not correct. But I was actually going to ask, Femi, my actual question to you before you make this really important point is that you realize that some claim that Mandela is a hero of the West. He's not really the African's hero. He's the hero of the capitalist system. Would you say this?
Please, is this important to have definition? What is a hero? How do you define a hero? What he did do for Africa as a whole to make him an African hero, please. Define nicely. Yeah? So please let us be objective. We don't talk bad of the dead. But please let's get our definitions correct.
John.
Yes.
Is Mandela a hero of the West?
You know, if you judge by the post Mandela out of prison, if you look at his life post that, maybe not the entire West would consider him a hero, but I think to an extent I would never know their real intentions and I'll never know their real heart, but all the outpouring and everything that you've seen shows that they had some appreciation for the man Nelson Mandela. Now, as to how deep that appreciation goes or the motive behind those appreciations, we would never really know.
It's anybody's guess, yep.
Yes, it's anybody's guess. But again, once he was out of prison, there were a couple of things I'm sure they appreciated about him, the man Mandela. I'm sure there were other things that they didn't appreciate about him. But all in all, it's in the nature of human beings sing the praises of the dead most of the time and try to blot out any sort of feelings that they must have witnessed. One of the things that I also wanted to throw in is that most of these, most political transitions are usually negotiated, right? And so in negotiated political transitions, you win some and you lose some. What I see coming out of a lot of people in their, I think, legitimate disappointment of Mandela is what had to be sacrificed in that negotiation, right? That it just felt that Black South Africa had to give up too much in order to move that political transition forward. And I can see why people would remain legitimately disillusioned and disappointed that it was an opportunity to right a lot of wrongs. And it seems as though, in order to move the political transition forward, we had to relegate some things to the background. But again, in real political terms, at that point, what do you do? Do you continue the... again, people would make different choices. Do you continue the struggle until you can get almost everything you want and delay the transition, or do you move ahead with the transition, hoping that once the transition is set into place, then that becomes your avenue to keep, fighting and, keep trying to sort of dismantle whatever it is that you're trying to dismantle it. Again, I continue to have a lot of questions and struggles.
Okay. In Ghana, for instance, we have a saying that if someone is selling power and you have to sell your mother to buy power, do so and then later on use that power to free your mom again. Possibly that's what Mandela was trying to do. Do you think so, Sadia?
Yeah, right, frankly, I can see that point. And
you know, John made what John was saying to make me, you know, reflect on what you said, Ratchet. And in fact, I think that Mandela has paid his dues to some extent. Like I said, before we went to prison and spent 27 years, he was a force to reckon with. He was a man we all loved in Africa. He was a hero then. And so I asked myself this question all the time. If I met Mandela, would I work in prison and die in prison, or would I come out? You know, would I compromise and come out? So I think, you know, yeah, you know, he did what a human being to do. So yeah, he compromised and he came out, and just like you said, if you can use your mother, tell your mother my power, then use that same power to redeem her. I'll go with that analogy. So I think he did what a human being, you know, in the capability of a human being, he did what he had to do. The problem we have yet now is just the fact that his praises are being sung so much to the surface that he's not a god. That's how we try to get reflect back and say, wait a minute, you know? It's not so, but
he's done his part. All right. You're still here on www.saharafmradio.com, and we're discussing the real legacy of Nelson Mandela. Was he a hero, or was he a traitor? Or maybe if a traitor is a strong word, did he compromise? Was he a conformist?
Compromise.
We'll be right back after this short commercial break. Stay with me. Sounds of Rasbumba. I believe in Africa. Yes, I do. Yes, indeed. We're still discussing the legacy of the man Nelson Mandela. And now we've been joined also by Kwesi Boateng. Kwesi Boateng is no stranger to this program. He's a linguist from Ghana. You're welcome to the show, Kwesi. Hello, Kwesi. Ah, yes. Yes, you've missed part of the show, but that's not anything. It's, you know, we're still here with you. So now let me welcome you with this question, because everybody answered it, but you didn't have the chance to because you were not here. Nelson Mandela, hero or traitor?
I am not going to give a straight answer, but I will say that we have noted him. Because he has spent, you know, greater part of his life trying to get freedom for his people. He was in prison for that. He has suffered. He's come back. He's forgiven and all. These are human traits that anybody would acknowledge. But as far as the African struggle is concerned, then we have questions. We have questions that, you know, gets you to wonder if indeed, I don't know if I should say, but if indeed he deserves, you know, the kind of, you know, status you want to raise him to, and so on. That is another question altogether. And I personally do not believe so. And in fact, Africans need to interrogate this seriously, because I think it's just another thing. It's just another thing, and you need to ask the right kind of question. So I don't know, Cesar, if I still have the chance to go ahead, or you ask me more questions.
Yeah, we'll ask you more questions later on. So let me go to John now. John.
Yes.
Nelson Mandela at a point supported the struggle of the Palestinian people.
Yes.
He, however, also noted clearly that Palestinians should also respect the state of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
That is very similar to the story in South Africa. You think it's just a symbol of compromise? Just like, okay, let's compromise and move on.
I personally do not see compromise as necessarily a part. Of course, it depends on what you're compromising about.
Yeah.
But particularly in the political arena, especially when you're trying to change the power structure,
that has been ingrained in a given society for years. There would be certain compromises that have to be made in the transition phase. It's either that or your other option is to fight it in a very violent, bloody way, right? So either you meet force with force and keep fighting until someone eventually emerges a winner on the battlefield, or you can move that fight from the, quote-unquote, from the battlefield into a different field that involves negotiations. Well, unfortunately, in negotiations, depending on the strengths and the weaknesses of the bargaining parties, certain compromises would have to be made along the way. Yeah. I personally am a political realist, which means that at some point you would have to face your political realities and make certain choices. Mm. They may not be the ideal choices, but it's the choices that moves you one step ahead. So again, it just all depends on, unless of course, the last thing I want to add is, unless of course the compromises that were made set back the clock of progress. Now that's a different story. But if these were necessary compromises, you know, to, you know, set the ball rolling and keep it rolling, then I don't see anything wrong with some of the compromises based on the political realities that Mandela faced that he had to make.
Some have argued that after all was said and done, indigenous African people are still where they are. Yes, they can go to the same bars as the white people. They can, you know, eat from the same restaurants, etc. But do they even have the wherewithal to do so? So, you know, people think it was not such a good bargain after all. Femi, what's your take on that?
Please, we have to understand that the black people do not ask for the moon. We are not even asking for space suits. People come to this continent brutalized, stole, colonized, and split everything. We prepare to let bygone be bygone. Why are they not ever prepared to share? Okay, in acknowledgement of Mandela's efforts to forgive and forget, we are going to give up 50% of the land in South Africa, give it to the deprived people. Is that too much to ask?
No.
Is that too much to ask? No, we sit down here, we say we are joyful because he was a great man of compromise. And some things are not compromised. Okay. Your dignity, our resources, it is resources, please. I don't know of any single African who own an inch or a meter of land in Europe. Hmm. Yeah? About 10% of the people who come outside of Africa own 70-80% of the land. And we are joyful, we are dancing that our great hero has compromised, has made things for them. We're talking of 20 years ago, what has happened? They are demanding that they be paid for land they stole from us.
Hmm.
Why should we be the only ones to be compromised? This is a serious question we should be asking ourselves.
Okay. Sadia.
We are prepared to let bygone be bygone. It is okay.
Yeah.
Our philosophy, our traditional philosophy is humanistic, and that is what the mistake we keep making. We keep extending our humanity to other people. They don't believe that.
Hmm.
Why should you sit on somebody's land which you are not using productively? I read something about Namibia land. It shocked me. People, Germans own land, almost 90% of the land in Namibia. And Namibia are considered to be a free country. 20 years after Mandela made this gesture, no reciprocity. Today they are smiling with their fake smiles, and we are dancing.
Okay. Now, let me ask Kwesi before I actually come to you, Sadia.
Yeah.
Based on the point that Femi just made, you know, about the land and all of that, just next door in Zimbabwe, Mugabe is facing a similar crisis. The world, at least the Western world, is not crazy about Mugabe. Can you make a link between Mugabe and Mandela? Mugabe himself actually described Mandela as soft.
Yeah,
question?
Yep.
Please indulge me a little bit.
I will.
I need to shift a little bit, you know.
Feel free.
Because we need to understand, you know, what it is that we as African people are fighting against, the philosophy that drives it, the modus operandi, and so on and so forth. And that this is where the greatness of Nkrumah comes in, because Nkrumah has dealt with the philosophy of what we are dealing with. And so if you put it in that context, this is where you see where Mugabe is and where Nelson Mandela is. Because Kwesi, at the end of the day, what motivates the imperialists? At the end of the day, it's economics.
Mm.
And so what motivated slave trade was economics. What motivated colonization was economics.
True.
What motivated apartheid was. And the imperialist is very clear on these things. And so in his case, for instance, he would have demanded reparations. And so reparations were given Europe, and you know of the Marshall Plan, just to repair Europe, you know, after what happened in the Second World War. And you know of the Holocaust, so-called, and what happened, and reparations are being paid. Even Iran, when Iran invaded, Iraq invaded Kuwait, there was, as part of the $250 billion reparations they were to pay. And Western corporate bodies were even taking part of the reparations. So the economic factor is always real. And so anybody who will go into negotiations without having his eye on it, who would have missed the point. And this is where Mandela totally missed the point. In the case of Mugabe, Mugabe had his eye on it, because they knew then that the most, at least at that time, important economic factor for them was the land.
Mm.
And so if you remember, Kwesi, the patriotic front made up of Mugabe and Joshua Nkomo, they refused to sign the Lancaster House deal because the land issue had not been addressed.
Yep.
And so even though they did not get it all, they were met halfway. And that is what Mugabe stood on, to take land. And so in the case of Mandela, it looks as if we have been sold out.
Hmm.
When we think, we place our eyes on the economic factor, which is the real factor.
Hmm.
So the only African leader we have is the one who turns the other cheek. And it's not as if the people we are dealing with are going to stop, you know, from their attempt, their final goal of controlling all the factors of production. And so we are really missing the point. And of course, you know what is dangerous? It looks as if they are with this trying to carve a new way for Africa. Because as far as I'm concerned, the way out of the liberation, the principles of it, the philosophy, the theory has been given by Nkrumah. We are not studying it. And now they are saying that, what they are saying by this is that the new way is Mandela way. Turn the other cheek. Because they would want, not want Namibia to deal with the issues there, issues of land, as has been mentioned, and so on and so forth. And they are taking all the factors of production, even now in Ghana.
Interesting.
Now in Ghana. They are taking over all. And that is the issue, and that's what my brother said, when they are taking, they are ripping us of our resources, we just dance.
Okay, interesting, very interesting. Sadia. Sadia.
Yes.
I stand corrected, but I heard that, and I'm sorry I couldn't find time to cross-check this before, so if I'm wrong, please forgive me. But I heard from a good source, though, that Mugabe was actually giving a standing ovation at Mandela's funeral whilst the crowd booed at Jacob Zuma. Do you think this is a signal that the South African people themselves are saying, that is what we want? What's going on in Zimbabwe is what we want.
Yes, roughly. I think that you'll be accurate in saying that, because I follow the trend, the news on Facebook, and the general consensus on South Africa and from, you know, a lot of other African countries is that Mugabe is the real African hero that is standing today. That's what a lot of people are saying and cheering for Mugabe. Because what did Mugabe do? Mugabe had the guts to tell the foreigners to get out, because there was really like they had the best of everything, the best of the land, the best of all. And the indigenous people were pushed to the background and suffering. So Mugabe said, no way. Go back to your original countries and let the original people occupy their land. And that's why he's not a hero. He's not a hero in the eyes of, you know, the economic powers, as I think John said, you know, it's economic.
Oh,
so if they don't, yes, if, or is it Kwesi made that point?
Kwesi made that point.
Okay, but you know, so yeah, the point that Kwesi made about it, the whole thing is economic, it's happening. If they're not going to benefit economically, then you are not their friend. Let's not forget Idi Amin. Idi Amin was portrayed to the whole world as a villain, you know, and everybody saw him as this monster. Why? Because he pushed all the people out of
Uganda.
Uganda, you know, because it was the same plight that the foreigners were then, they were enjoying all the goodies, and the people, the indigenous people were suffering. So he pushed them all out. So he's a hero. But today, they have to come back and rewrite history. The same goes for Emperor Haile Selassie of Ethiopia, when the Italians came to take his land. And that's why we say, until the philosophy, which makes one man superior and another man inferior, is perpetuated, that we are going to fight war. You know, it's not a matter of compromise. We have to struggle.
It appears
to see. Heroes, you know, those heroes in Africa that are struggling for the equal distribution. You know, the Africans are, we Africans are very general. We don't say that don't eat. We don't say don't eat some. But the fact that you come and take everything 100% and kill us and want to destroy us and wipe us from the face of the earth, if not, why should we sit down and watch that happen?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes, yes. I know what you're saying. All right, John.
Yes.
Nuclear, let's go to the issue of nuclear weapons. Apartheid South Africa had a nuclear weapons program. Part of the discussion, part of the deal that they had to agree to was to dismantle this nuclear program. Now, some say that they did so because they didn't want a nuclear system in the hands of a black nation. What would South Africa look like under a black government with a nuclear system? What would it look like?
Oh, that's a tough one. And we would, you know, we would never really know the answer to that. But again, I'm sure those who followed, you know, the powers that we were referring to, I'm sure the powers that we had their own motivation. And so again, I don't think they were just idle bystanders in the whole transitional phase either. That they also had to make sure that certain things will happen or will not happen in the transition phase, you know, during that period in which they were thinking about moving away from white minority rule, black minority rule to in Southern Africa. But as to what would have happened with a nuclear South Africa ruled by a black president, all your guess is as good as mine.
But do you think this was the real motivation for dismantling the nuclear program, though?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know.
Okay, all right. We'll leave it at that. Actually, we have just about enough time for one more question for each of you. Let me go to you, Femi. Sharpeville massacre is something that we will never forget. I mean, it has been glossed over. It's not like it's been given the status of the Holocaust or anything like that. But we still know there was a Sharpeville massacre. Just recently, some miners in South Africa were gunned down by security forces. People are blaming the government, which is a black government in that country, for doing almost nothing at all. Is this why Zuma is not that, you know, popular with the people, and why didn't we hear Nelson Mandela's voice on this?
He was too weak to speak on that
time. He was?
Mandela was terribly sick at that
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But we should give more credit to the ordinary people in our continent. We always assume that they don't know what is happening. I mean, what more evidence do we need that Mandela Compromise was a total failure with the people of South Africa? The president was good, Mugabe was killed, what more evidence do we need? The people spoke. The people of South Africa spoke. And they spoke very loudly, publicly, with all the international media focus on them. That's not what they fought for. I am in contact with a good number of South Africans, and honestly, this hoopla about Mandela, they're not so enthusiastic about the whole thing, to be honest with you. Mm. I mean, we also should realize that while the imperialists, they understand and fight for their interests, they also try to determine what our interests should be. They also try to determine who our heroes should be. Mm. That's why they're forcing on us Mandela. It was a joint, it was a collective effort to the liberation struggle, the ANC. Yeah? Mandela was one among very giants, Sisulu, Mbeki, Oliver Tambo.
Yep.
Why did they forget all those ones? Why did they forget Chrisani? Hmm. Why Mandela? Those are the serious questions we should be asking ourselves. Why did they elevate Mandela above all these great heroes?
Yes.
Sobukwe.
Yes.
Those are important questions. They have the agenda with Mandela. So suddenly they transform into saint. Africans were asking a poll by the BBC who their greatest hero of the millennium. They choose Nkrumah. And today some mindless people are telling us that Mandela was the greatest African. I mean, no, please.
Well,
the BBC conducted the poll, so we cannot accuse BBC of being pro-African. Africans selected Kwame Nkrumah as their greatest man of the millennium.
Based on that, I would read something someone put on my Facebook, in a message on Facebook to me. He said Kwame Nkrumah was a liberator of a continent. Mandela was the liberator of a country. That's how he sees it. Anyhow.
Please ask one question here. Can you tell me exactly what one thing Mandela stood for as an African, as a Pan-African?
Compromise.
What I hear, that compromise without getting anything is stupidity.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah? No, it's not in our culture to compromise to the extent.
All right.
The resource belongs to you once you become a beggar.
Okay. All right. So my producer has just signaled me, but I'm going to read something from a document which is called the ANC's Freedom Charter. The Freedom Charter forms the building blocks based on which the ANC wanted to see a free South Africa. And then I'm going to give each of you a minute or two to tell me what you think. I mean, if you think that what is happening in South Africa right now is anywhere close to what was envisioned by the founding fathers back in the day. I read, quote, "The national wealth of our country, the heritage of South Africans, shall be restored to the people. The mineral wealth beneath the soil, the banks and monopoly industry shall be transferred to the ownership of the people as a whole. All other industries and trade shall be controlled to assist the well-being of the people." Let me start with you, Sadia. Is this what we are seeing?
Not what we're seeing at all. And I guess all the discussions we've had already point to the fact that that's not what we're seeing. And that's why we are debating whether, Mandela is a hero or not.
Okay.
And I feel like if he had continued with that agenda, then, something better would have been said. But we have to continue that agenda.
And for you, I'm sure that apart from everything else, you also have issues with him living Winnie Mandela, I believe so.
Oh, yeah. Winnie Mandela is a great... She's a great speaker. I think it was John that made a point that the fact that it's not a divorce, but why they could have... if you don't have... You can reconcile your difficulties with divorce. That's fine, right? They were hungry.
That comradeship going. That's true.
Yes.
All right.
That's
okay. Kwesi?
Yeah, Kwesi, in trying to answer the question why they are raising Mandela to this level, Kwesi, look, we started a struggle by Nkrumah and those other great people. And Nkrumah, when we got independence, says the independence of Ghana was meaningless unless it was linked up with the total liberation of
the African continent.
Mandela is at the tail end of that dream.
tail end. So Mandela, South Africa, completed that thing. And that was only political. Economically, Nkrumah had started. And obviously, they did not allow Nkrumah. The process was truncated. And so Mandela, at the tail end, should have reminded Africans of the second phase of the struggle, which is economics. And should have taken that lead in demonstrating that Africa now are ready to take its share of the economy, you know, economic cake of the world. And you should have demonstrated in the kind of agreement he signed with them and the kind of plan they would have laid in repairing South Africa. He has failed woefully. Hmm. And let us not sit there. They are doing something because now, because you know, even in Ghana, that has been at the forefront of suppressing what the Nkrumah stands for. Now, Ghana is giving way to you. And they have realized the ideals of Nkrumah is rising. Now, they want to carve another part quickly. You understand me? Mm. They want to carve another part quickly, and that is the Mandela part. Turn the other cheek and we'll hail you. We should resist it.
Okay. All right. Femi.
Yeah.
Are we anywhere close to what the charter, the Freedom Charter, you know, stated?
The answer is so evident. South Africa is the most lopsided country in the world. The gap between the rich and the poor is wider in South Africa than any other country, according to the statistics of the region. Well, we look at what happened in America, and is that what people fought for? And the Africans were really asking for peanuts, the mine owners, the white mine owners. They would rather spend money on yachts and helicopters or whatnot, instead of paying fair wages. Mandela did not only betray the trust of the people, he betrayed the charter of the ANC, which advocated this redistribution of wealth. What I've done is redistributed. Nothing.
Hmm.
The landowners, the white landowners, are asking for compensation. They are demanding exorbitant prices to be paid before they will release land. How much did they pay for the land? Is that not the question we should ask them?
Good question.
Yeah.
Very good question.
We should pay them the same amount they pay for the land.
which is nothing.
They shot our people, possibly took them off. These are things that happen with the legislature and the legislative powers of the apartheid regime.
Hmm.
These things are well documented. We should be able to read them.
Okay. And John?
No, well, as everybody has said, the evidence is very clear that if you look at all the major economic and social indicators today, you still see Black South Africans really lagging behind minority population, and so we're so far away from, you know, that expressed desire in the ANC charter of actually seeing some real transformation in the lives of Black South Africans.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you, John Osekwapon, John of Research and Planning for the Student Affairs at Columbia University. We had Kwesi Boateng. Kwesi Boateng is a linguist from Ghana. We had Femi Osofishan. Where did Osofishan come from? Femi Akomolafe. And Femi, like I keep saying, I find it hard to describe you because I know you don't want to be described as a journalist, but that's the one word that could easily roll off my tongue if anybody asks me to, you know, introduce you.
No worries.
You are an African and you're an activist, so at least that I know I've got correct. And then, of course, we had Sadia Nuhu. Sadia is a mental health specialist and an activist. Thank you so much for joining us on this program. And
you're welcome.
We definitely, our doors are open to you again. Definitely, we'll be reaching out to you again on more topics.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Nice
enjoyed
the
discussion.
All right.
Yeah. And goodbye to all of you.
Okay. So, next Wednesday, we may or we may not be here. I don't know. If we are, God bless. If we're not, I'm leaving you with this to always remind you of this program, Conscious Vibes. Sounds of Natty Joe Amanfo. Dig in. Kilode Africa. What is wrong with us?